Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And sorry for the little delay with the intro music going out, and I'm not saying anything. So we are going through a mind-blowing act that was done by Congress. And this is the first time I've gone through this. So as I read this, I'm going to be getting discoveries, and I'm going to make a lot of comments as we kind of go through, because let me lay it out for you. Every year we go through the presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation. Now, we know that in March 3rd, 1817, Madison shut down Congress for trying to pass a bonus bill giving them the authority to tax the states to make improvements to the highways and waterways within the Union. And actually, not all of them, just a few special ones that they felt were key avenues for commerce. And Madison shut them down. And then a few years later, in 1822, when Monroe basically was in his last, you know, throes of his presidency, because he took office in 1817, so he was definitely in his last term, when Congress came to him with a bill specifically dealing with the Cumberland Gap. And he shut them down. He vetoed the bill and said, look, this power doesn't exist. So he shut them down. And then later on, in a similar bill, they went to Jackson, President Jackson, in 1830. So in 1817, 1822, and 1830, three separate presidents shut down the federal government for being able to assume the powers of road building, infrastructure building, and so forth. And what we're seeing here in this very beginning of, you know, this new age government is the federal government has deliberately assumed the authority to make highways and waterways out through these states, and basically paying off the existing states in the Union that were going to be benefiting or not benefiting. I have no idea, but when we look at how the disbursements of money from the sale of public lands was going to be shared, we're going to actually discover, because I got to read this all over again, but before I read this, I wanted to make this, you know, this clarity that the Department of Transportation, the federal involvement in improving highways and waterways, or even building them, is not a constitutional power. Therefore, we will go through that content as soon as we're done with this, because I don't want you to take my word for it. We do it every year, but it seems like the way everything is laying out, it's, you know, one thing is forcing me to do the next thing, like the Utah Enabling Act forced me to go through the earlier Enabling Acts. So as we're kind of doing a content by, in some ways, by discovery, it's ironic that we're looking at how things became the acceptable norm because the federal government basically paid off those states in the Union to say, well, we're gonna create a disadvantage. They're doing exactly what they said they wouldn't do. They couldn't do. They can't do because they didn't give them the authority in the Constitution to diminish new states coming into the Union where they wouldn't have full access. They wouldn't have their own land, that they weren't actually sovereign, that the federal government said, well, we're taking this land away from you, calling it public land, and we're going to sell it, and we're going to help benefit the old states. And what we're going to find in Section 2 is they're going to benefit D.C. DC is going to start making money off of this. Oh, but it's to help build the school systems. Now, we already know what out of all of the maniacal powers that the federal government seized, education was a critical one. Because if they could control, if they could get their grubby mitts into our education system, they can start controlling the narrative and actually create what they believe is the norm. They can actually revise history. They can engineer our society. And it's very dangerous. Remember, we already covered the codfishery bounties. I may not have. As a matter of fact, I don't think I have this year, but I know I cover it every year. And so when we get to that, that's going to beg that one next. In other words, we're going to have to cover the codfishery bounties. And unfortunately, Tammy's not getting this because I'm trying to double up content. Because what we want to do is we want to do a full blitz of getting all the content from the beginning of this year all the way through the rest of this year and into the next year so that we've covered everything. Because we're going to basically lay out the descriptions of what information we're covering. And then down the road, what we're going to do is we're going to kind of create the syllabus so that people can just come back and get these things. Because what we're hoping to do in 2026 is start a new mode of operandi. In other words, we're going to actually try to change the content of this show to be actually like a monitor or a sensor system so that you can understand what's going on around you that's actually important. Because what you think is important, like the Trump sending the National Guard into California, well, that's just tyranny. The federal government doesn't have the ability to nationalize the National Guard unless Congress has called them forth. The fact that they have the ability to just tap and exercise without having to go to the states formally and say, we're going to use the National Guard. The Dick Act, which is one of the things we need to cover this year or next, the Dick Act is where this all perverted the whole concept of the state's militias. To be clear, many of the states have been violating the Constitution by not protecting themselves. They're not to allow an invasion, and yet everybody from the federal government out to the states are allowing an invasion. Do you know how much money people have made because of the invasion? There are people that have been making, you know, hand over fist profits from this invasion. Folks, I'm going to be, I think it's David von Kleist. He's a new host on this show or on Red State Talk Radio. And we're going to be talking about the invasion and the magnitude of the invasion, because when we look at the invasion, and the invasion doesn't necessarily is limited to those people crossing the border. The invasion is being compounded, and actually the invasion was initiated years and years ago, back in the 1970s and early 80s, when the federal government started importing Vietnamese as refugees. Got to remember that the federal government could only regulate the state's importation of persons. They couldn't import people themselves. The only power they have regarding people coming into the states and people becoming citizens is they have the authority to create a uniform act of naturalization. That's it. The only thing that they have a responsibility is making sure that the people that come across the border are legitimately coming across the border to immigrate into a particular state. To make sure that that person that comes into San Diego or comes into some other port of entry, whether it be at the coast or on a border, that person actually has fair to be able to fly or travel to get to the state where they're migrating to. They're not just to, you know, cross the line and then, okay, now what are we going to do? Because if that line happens to be in Texas, the southern border of Texas, and they don't have an active immigration agreement with Texas, then they are an invader because they've come here without the authority of the state to where they're immigrating. Immigration is literally a process that is initiated by the person that wants to come to America. You just don't flee to America. This concept of refugees is not constitutional. If the federal government felt like we needed to become a host for refugees, political refugees, it doesn't matter, whatever the refugees, economic refugees, war refugees, whatever, the Constitution must be amended, period. Washington warned us about this, regardless of the noble intent, you know, we're helping these people because they need us. And we're so blessed. We're the richest country in the world. We should be able to do everything for everybody. Folks, don't buy that crap. Quit buying this crap. This is how they've been weaponized, and they've been using all of these things as wars against us. And I've been telling you, and I stated this, and I'm sorry, I'm starting off this monologue with going out to, without even doing the obligatories, right? But the reality is the people that have been making bank over fist over this, because it's creating a housing crisis. It's creating a crisis in so many different markets where people are getting money, federal dollars, to be able to take on these unnatural expanses of demand. Now, what's going to happen when we actually get these people out of here? Our housing is going to have a massive gutting. In other words, there's going to be a lot of houses that are going to be either up for sale, up for rent, or what have you. And just remember what ended up happening in 2006, when all of a sudden, you know, people couldn't pay their mortgages because they were back. Next thing you know, there was all these foreclosures. So, folks, be prepared. Things are going to happen. And, you know, we can't say, oh, let's not enforce the Constitution. Let's never go down that path. We're far better off to have to suffer a bankruptcy. And, you know, because these people that overextended themselves, as long as you are a good American and you've put yourself into a position on a mortgage, you've got a job, and your job isn't dependent on these tyrannical policies, then you're protected. You're okay. You're going to make it. You need to start self-evaluating where you are, because if we actually succeed and get the government back into compliance, hopefully you're not a government employee, a federal employee in some vestige or in some department, some office, some agency that is unconstitutional. Sorry. The government had no business in creating that and creating those jobs, creating the labor contracts involved in all of that. It's all a facade. It's all illegitimate. It's all fraud, and it's fraud being perpetrated upon the United States citizens. So remember, it's now or never. As we appeal to heaven, as we continue to learn, I'm still learning. So if I'm still learning, you should be learning too, because so many people tell me that when I talk to them on the phone or what have you, it's like a fire hose. This isn't rocket science. There may be lots of things you just don't understand, but hurry up, catch up. You know, all you've got to do is start filling the sandbags, because it's about reading what we're reading. Sit down and read these things with us. This is why we read these things for you. So that you can actually sit down, we have these documents out there. This will be posted. All the documents we've read this year so far, the ratification debates, they're there. We will update those when we're all done. But for the most part, you should be able to go through them, because almost everything we're reading this year are the things that we've already identified. There may be a few modifications, and if it is, we will let you know. But all of that being said, as we go through these documents, I beseech you, I implore you, I beg you, I admonish you to pick these documents up, play these podcasts, and read along with us. Because if you read as well as you hear us reading them as well, and then we stop and we kind of explain, what the heck are they talking about here? Then you will have a better understanding a lot faster than just sitting and reading things. Because a lot of times, it happens to me, it happens to everybody, your comprehension just isn't there. Because as you sit and continue to read, you hit this max overload, and some people just can't compute all of that stuff. I've been told that many people read my stuff over and over and over again multiple times just to absorb what I'm saying. And it's not that I'm that difficult. I don't think it's difficult. I think I write in, you know, I'm a simpleton. I think I'm a simpleton. Anyway, it's all about constitutional compliance. We cannot fear this. This is the elixir that will actually strengthen America. It will get us back onto a stable currency where there will actually be a future for our future generations, because we will be stabilized by the rule of law. And we're not going to let them assume something. You know why it's so hard to get an amendment? Because it's not just mob rule. The majority of people have to absolutely agree. And I'm here to tell you, they won't get these amendments passed, which is why they fear these amendments. Because to this day, we've never given them the amendment. The presidents have never actually allowed, other until they started violating the Constitution after Jackson, to allow the Department of Transportation to even exist. And ever since then, they've been allowing every violation left and right. So don't tell me that, you know, the corruption started with Teddy Roosevelt. The corruption, we're already pointing out in 1841 that the corruption was going rampant and they were making the states complicit in the game. So compliance to the Constitution at the local level, then the state and the federal level, is the only way to do this. Therefore, we have to start understanding what we need to do that. We've got a presidential election, final obligatory presidential election coming up in 2028. If you want to actually start creating the dialogue, you know, I know that this won't happen. And hopefully it'd be great if we actually had some people putting pressure on the state secretaries of state, I should say, on those secretaries of state to say, hey, we want to choose our electors. Where in the heck is in the Constitution did the parties in the state legislatures actually get to determine the outcome of the electors? And then everybody will start scratching their head to go, yeah, you know what? That's true. The party is determining who the electors are by using a popular vote. That's not in the Constitution either. We are to choose our electors. That is the constitutional process. Yeah, let's start waking people up, folks. Let's actually get and push constitutional compliance, not just over this little, you know, myopic thing, whether it be the Second Amendment, whether it be, you know, medical freedom, whether it be restoring the county suffrage in the Senate or the state suffrage in the U.S. Senate. Bottom line, those things can be, all of these things can be done in parallel, but we don't just say this is the only thing we need to fix. I think that we actually have to start doing everything we can to drain the swamp in every possible direction. The faster we get the swamp drained, because, you know, if you just start draining the swamp in one area, you're going to have these little swamps because, you know, the bottom isn't a perfect pool. It's a landscape, and there'll be all sorts of other swamps. So, and when you realize that it's just about dredging the entire swamp and getting it drained and working in parallel to doing that. Because, you know, it's one thing if one person can do one thing, right? One person can only drain, you know, maybe dig out one side of the swamp. But if everybody's digging on the entire swamp, where we're all uniting on the Constitution, demanding full compliance of the Constitution, that there is the key, my friend. So let's dive into this. Now, we started and we got into section two. I'm going to reread section one again. And I just say this because this is so mind-boggling. This is Congress literally bragging and making all of these states complicit in violating the Constitution by taking the windfall of unconstitutional sales of allegedly public land that actually belongs to another state. Well, hold on here. Maybe what we should do is, you know, because this isn't what, this would not be the constitutional process. But maybe what we should do is we should actually go in and take land from all of these states involved in this very first fiasco and sell it at our benefit. Those states that actually have been funding their corruption. Be it enacted, section one, be it enacted by the House and the Senate, or the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that from and after the 31st day of December in the year of our Lord, 1841, there be allowed and paid to each of the states of Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Alabama, Missouri, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Michigan, over and above what each of the states is entitled to by the terms of the compacts entered between them and the United States upon their admission into the Union. Okay, so that's by reading this a little bit slower, this absolutely helps me. Because now we see that there are deliberate and separate compacts that the federal government created that actually violated the Constitution. When a state is joining the Union, they're to have full sovereignty. What are these compacts that they're going to get paid off? Oh, because they had public lands that they stole, and that the federal government, when they sold those things, were going to benefit other states. So something tells me that we actually need to look into these very particular states. So I'm just highlighting Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Alabama, Missouri, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Michigan. And so I'm highlighting that with the blue and the red, that these states are actually going to be getting a windfall. Now, let's keep going. Upon the admission, so compacts entered into between them and the United States upon their admission into the Union, the sum of 10% upon net proceeds of the sales of the public lands, which subsequent to the day aforesaid shall be made within the limits of each of said states respectively. Okay, so they're now saying that they're going to start selling that land. Provided that the sum so allowed to the said states respectively shall be in no wise affected or diminished on account of any sums which have been heretofore or shall be hereafter applied to the construction or continuance of the Cumberland Road. So right here is where this Cumberland Road, and so let me say here, so the said states respectively, I'll highlight shall in no wise go to the Cumberland. So I'm going to start highlighting this. So that phrase shall be in no wise affected or diminished on account of any sums which have been there heretofore or shall be thereafter applied to the construction or continuance of the Cumberland Road. So we're highlighting that with blue as well. But that the disbursements of said road shall remain in heretofore chargeable on the 2% fund percentum fund provided for by compacts with the several states of the United States. So anyway, so what we're looking at is they've created this very complicit little contract with all of the states, as well as with these new states coming in. This is how they were actually doing this Ponzi scheme by selling public lands in certain states and claiming public lands in new states. And as they started moving, well, we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so after reading that little last line, because reading this in contractualese, old Englishese, it may be not as clear, but after you read it a few times, it actually starts jumping out more. So it says right here in the very last of that, 2% fund provided for by compacts with the several of the said states. So they're still referencing the said states. So I believe, and we're going to get into section two, where other areas are going to benefit from the public sales as well. Because Section 2, and it be further enacted, that after deducting the said 10% and what by the compacts aforesaid, they're talking about net. This isn't gross. So out of the profits, 10% is going to be paid back to these states. And then 2%, fund for and chargeable on a 2%. So in other words, the federal government is charging a 2% on top of this. And they say after deducting the said 10% and what by the compacts aforesaid has heretofore been allowed to the states aforesaid. So that's becoming red. The residue of the net. Again, net proceeds, that means the profits, which net proceeds shall be ascertained by deducting from the gross proceeds all the expenditures. So you got the gross, you know, the overall sales, and then the expenditures of the year for the following objects. This is where, so I'm going to highlight that, from the gross proceeds of the year for the following objects, salaries and expenses on account of the general land office, expense for surveying public lands, salaries and expenses in the survey or general's office, salaries, commissions, and allowances to the registers and receivers. There you go. And then there's this semicolon that I'm looking at that kind of separates the next one. The 5% to new states of all the public lands of the United States, wherever situated, which shall be sold subsequent to the said 31st day of December, shall be divided among the 26 states of the Union. Wow. Folks, what we're reading here is a very exposing document to show how maniacal the federal government started playing around and doing things they had no authority to do. They don't have the authority. So here's the interesting thing. One of the things why I highlighted this, because for the following objects, expenditures of the following objects. Well, salaries and expense on account of the general land office. Hold on here. If this is legitimate government, then the payment of this needs to come from the apportionment tax or the impost tax or the other taxes that the federal government has. Oh, but this is a new way of making revenue. And because they're doing things, because when you look at the salaries and expenses on account of the general office, expenses of surveying public lands, salaries and expenses in the surveys, general office, and salaries for commissions and allowances to the registers and receivers. So they're identifying this little bureaucracy that has no authority to do what they're doing. Well,
they got to pay them, too, to do the work. So they have to deduct that as expenses. And because they can't actually tax the states to doing this, this is how they're going to pay to do all of this. Over a while or over a period of time, it becomes normalized so that instead of selling the land, they just shift it over to the apportionment taxes. Because as people become dumber and dumber, while the federal government is playing more and more of these these shell games and these fraudulent compacts and basically making more and more states as they join the union complicit in how they're going to make money. How you know, you guys are going to get rich. We're all getting rich here. That was never allowed. We're going through the ratification debates. If they don't have the ability to do these things, they can't do them. Okay, so we just finished that salaries and commissions to the registers. The 5% to new states of all the public lands in the United States, wherever situated, shall be sold subsequent to the 31st day of December, shall be divided among the 26 states of the Union and the District of Columbia and the territories of Wisconsin, Iowa, Florida, according to the respective federal representative population as ascertained by the last census, to be applied by the legislatures of the said states to such purposes as the legislature may direct. Now, this is incredible, and it is complicit. I mean, this is, folks, do you understand what they're talking about here? They're doing shenanigans well outside their power. And they've convinced everybody that they can do this, or at least everybody's going along with it. The states are going along with it because they're all getting a little stipend from all of this. Hey, we're making money. The selling of America had begun, provided that the distributive share to which the District of Columbia, this is the kicker right here, provided that the distributive share to which the District of Columbia shall be entitled shall be applied to free schools or education in some other form as Congress may direct, and provided also that nothing herein contained shall be construed to the prejudice of future applications for a reduction of the price of public lands, or to the prejudice of the applications for a transfer of the public lands on reasonable terms to the United States or to the states within which they lie, or to make such future deposits of the public lands on any part thereof as Congress may deem expedient. Oh my gosh. You know, I'm just absolutely in amazement of what they're really doing here, but this is actually how DC is making money when they're not to be making money at all, and they're paying off, and now they're getting their hands in free schools. So this actually proves that yours truly needs to actually go in. So I'm actually making a little note here that we need to cover the vetoes, and we need to cover the, let me see here, what else was it? Oh, the vetoes of the five bills. And, the cod fishery bounties. Yes, cod fisheries. And why is this? Because in the cod fisheries, Madison forewarned. He used this as shock value. And, everybody was aghast in Congress when he said, hey, if we can use the public purse to actually start putting, you know, things into welfare or what have you, if we can actually take money from the public and pay for these bounties, then what's going to keep us from actually creating our own churches and our own education system and so forth and so on? And everybody goes, folks, how long did it take from the cod fishery bounties of 1792 and that debate with Madison to 1841 where they're actually doing this? They have now started setting up a mechanism of paying and controlling education. Even though everything, all the walls and the maze had not been fully created, But by the time 1953 came along, President Eisenhower, literally formed the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, where the maze had been complete. They have now assumed full control over health, education, and welfare. Clearly, objects that are not enumerated within the Constitution, but over time, because they were applying money, taking money, and doing this Ponzi scheme, but, you know, taking money from the new states joining and the states that had just joined, and as they sell that land, they're throwing the money around to everybody saying, hey, you know, don't complain about this stuff. We're all making money here. And these are all really good things because we're given free education, just like they said. Right? That's exactly what they said. Shall be applied to free schools or education in some other form. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So, Section 3. But this is really heavily highlighted. And this is a long, this is 7 pages. I've kind of condensed everything down. It was even longer. But I've condensed this entire act down into 7 pages like a regular document. And I'm going, this is not quick reading. Okay, so Section 3, and to be further enacted, that the several sums of money received in the treasury as the net proceeds of the sale. Okay, so I've got to highlight all this. The net proceeds of the sales of the public land shall be paid at the treasury half yearly on the first day of January and July in each year during the operations to this act. To such person or persons as to the respective legislatures and of the said states and territories or of the governors thereof, in case the legislatures shall have made no such appointment, shall authorize and direct to receive the same. So this is how they're going to pay for it. Okay, so okay, this is how they're going to pay for it. All right, well... That's just a basic little red highlighting. Section 4, and be it further enacted, that any sum of money which at any time may become due and payable to any state of the Union or to the District of Columbia by virtue of this act as the portion of the said state and or district, said state or district, of the proceeds of the sale of the public lands shall be first applied to the payment and debt due to the payable from the said state or district to the United States, provided, okay, so now there's this little provided, provided that this shall not be construed to extend to the sums deposited with the states under the Act of Congress of 23rd June, 1836. Oh my gosh, now I have a new act to go get. We're going backwards through this, right? We started in what, the 1890-something of the Enabling Act, and now they're actually exposing the previous act where they made huge encroachments, and this goes back to 1836. Isn't that the year Madison was basically incapacitated and in his days before he died? So, in other words, this is when they really started running amok. And so I got to highlight this. So 23rd June, 1836, an act entitled to regulate the deposits of the public money. Okay, well, there we go. And so that is, that's key, folks. That is very key. Nor to any sums apparently due to the United States as balances of debts growing out of the transactions of the Revolutionary War. Now, what transactions of the Revolutionary War were they still paying? Because we know that under Andrew Jackson, all the war debts were paid. So, was there some wool being pulled over their eyes? As a matter of fact, who was the president at this point in time? This was the second president of the United States under the Democratic Party, Martin Van Buren. Right? Because Andrew Jackson took office, I believe, in 1828, because John Quincy Adams took office or was elected in 1824, he did one term, and then Andrew Jackson kicked him out in 1828. So in 1836, this is when Van Buren is being elected. Jackson is out, Van Buren is in, and this is where they basically said, hold on, how is it that Jackson is making claim and on his way out, they're writing, or in this document in 1841, they're claiming that there were still Revolutionary War debts. Okay, so I'm going to have to pull this up, and we'll have to actually make this another thing we have to follow into. You know, I was actually thinking that the Organic Act would really expose the big things and so forth, but I'm finding that these things actually show how the federal government started operating in unconstitutional ways and how they started getting the states to become complicit. So by the time the Organic Act came along, it was too late for the states to actually say, hey, you can't do this. You can't create a state out of D.C. By this point in time, there was enough ignorance in understanding the exclusive legislation and so forth. There was enough ignorance regarding the Constitution. And what's interesting is, as I was reading through the debates of the 14th Amendment, the radical Republicans were actually reading ratification debates. They were actually reading some key documents to help people understand. But as soon as they got replaced, it seemed like all of that stuff got scuttled again. I'm just absolutely amazed at these discoveries that we're getting. So I have to take my hat off to that sovereign citizen PDF that was sent to me by, you know, a strong, Reclaiming the Republic leader from Virginia, who I won't mention, but the fact that he sent me that and this last thing that I read out of that act. I mean, there were a couple of things like the very first petition. I hadn't pulled that in, and that actually was a new discovery. So I'm learning, folks. I'm actually learning to see how right what we have to do is. It's just becoming clearer and clearer. It is becoming more and more obvious that these are the things we have to do, right? We have to start using interposition. We have to start petitioning. We actually have to start holding every public servant accountable. Stop. Just because they did it before doesn't mean it's right and doesn't mean you can continue to do it. Stop. Okay. So Section 5 now tells us, and it be further enacted, that this act shall continue and be in force until otherwise provided by law. In other words, this becomes a perpetual Ponzi scheme. Unless the United States shall be involved in war with any foreign power. Hold on here. Do you understand what that means? That means that if another nation comes in and we get engaged in a war, an actual declared war, what war did we have between 1841 and 1860, the Civil War, right? So that's almost 20-year span. We actually had some, I think, some conflicts out in Southern California. We had some conflicts regarding the Western lands and all of that. But, you know, because we saw the Treaty of Guadalupe and so forth. But I don't believe that that war was considered a real war. Or I should say, it should not have affected these things because those were all out in the territory. So, I am finding that, you know, this is becoming more and more nefarious. In which event, from the commencement of hostilities, this act shall be suspended during the continuance of such war, provided nevertheless that if prior to the expiration of this act, any new state or states shall be admitted into the Union, there be assigned to such new state or states the proportion of the proceeds accruing after their admission into the Union to which such state or states may be entitled upon the principles of this act together with what state or states may be entitled by virtue of compacts and to be made on their admission into the Union. Wow. Okay, so I remember telling you, and it's in Why Counties Matter Most, that the federal government had a huge benefit of admitting states into the union because of taxes. I had no idea that it wasn't just taxes. It was the ability to sell state land, to where the more and more these states came in and the more public land that they seized, the more windfall in the sales of those lands. The federal government has no authority to be involved in the sales of any land within a state. None. They have the only stipend that they can control are the lands that they buy for defense purposes in Article 1, Section 8, which are magazines, forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards or shipyards, and needful buildings. Those are the only pieces of land that they have the ability to one purchase or possess. So the concept of public lands is absolutely a violation. And and these acts that we're discovering here, this is huge. This is really, 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 really huge. And so, you know, I can't emphasize enough how we're learning more and more. And the facts are, folks, the ratification debates literally spell out what the states needed to hold the federal government into doing. And as long as the federal government can corrupt your public leaders, then they're going to continue to do this. This is why when we look at these red states and these rhino players, somehow they're getting their hands, they're getting greased. This is a very deep and dark, you know, I know in Why Counties Matter Most, I basically assert that the swamp extends all the way down to our county governments. And it's all about money. And so there's a guy by the name of Schweitzer that basically wrote a book. I have it on my website, the book that he wrote. And it talks about the swamp, or how every person in Congress makes money by their votes in these committees. As the committees pass these things to go to the body of the whole, that process right there is where everybody makes money from the lobbyists who are driving these bills. Folks, the corruption is just unfathomable by most people. The question is, what do we really need to do? I'm only proving to you in these formal documents how they are violating the Constitution. So the reality is this. We have to start holding our county commissioners, your county legislators, accountable to the Constitution. We're doing this in this next article. The next article is actually going to lay waste and identify and expose all of these problems with the Federalist Papers, the problems with, you know, our form of government. And I don't want to say the complexity, but the beauty of its checks and balances by the tiers from the counties to the states and the states to the federal or the national or the general government. Let's just keep general government, because the state's a general government as well. So as we expose all of these things to you, this stuff right here that's just jumping out clearly reeks of, where is the authority in the Constitution for one, them to have public lands, and to basically use the sale of public lands to actually pay, because they don't have the authority to give any state money. They have the authority to buy, you know, guns. They have the authority to buy ammo, you know, by buying those things out of the states, but to hand them actually cash to say, hey, we're going to sell out America here. And in so doing, they're probably selling to foreign interests as well. And as a matter of fact, I haven't found that yet, but I do believe, and I've been told, that the railroads and when they started doing these things in the late 1820s, this with Jackson, of course, but I think John Quincy Adams might have been involved a little bit. I'm not sure. But I do know that there is a highly probable that the federal government has been basically paying out monarchies or families that have been involved in this globalist movement. You know, when we look at America and the railroad system, isn't it interesting that we always maintained a difference? In other words, the gauge of our railroads, instead of actually creating, as we started creating railroads, we could have followed and made railroads the same gauge or the same width from one rail to the next of, you know, that span of the wheels on the rails. We changed it so that we would have to buy and build our own, and or any nation would actually have to build to our sizes. And if we don't buy from them, then they're stuck because they have a railroad car or a locomotive that won't operate on their rails. So it's kind of like this. And I'm going to go down this little rat hole, so it's bear with me because I'm not going to get into Section 6. We'll get into that in our next free content day, which is Friday. So when you look at NFL teams, every time an NFL team changes their logo, changes their colors, changes something, they have a windfall, especially if they're performing well, they have a windfall of people going out and buying those changes of the jerseys, the hats, and the paraphernalia. That's how they make extra money, by making changes. And so this likens, and as a matter of fact, over the weekend, as I've been going through the different variations of the Bible, I have realized that there is money in rewriting the Bible every time. Why do they rewrite? Because they say they've got a more accurate interpretation of the scriptures from King James to the New International Version. And I find it interesting that I was making this comparison, that in 1 Corinthians 15, towards the later scriptures, off the top of my head, I don't remember what the numbers were, but they were talking about the glory of the sun, the glory of the celestial, the glory of the celestial, the glory of the moon and stars and how they differ. The glory, they use glory. Now, the New International doesn't, and glory is a word that was universal, and it was universally applied. And now all of a sudden they're changing it. And when I look and I see the difference, anybody that is going by the New International Bible, they're being told that that's a more accurate interpretation. And I'm telling you it's not. And as a matter of fact, the reason why they tell you that is because then you buy their books. And they tell you, how did they all of a sudden have more insights about a language that is even further away from our days today than it was back in the... Because how long have they been writing the Bible? Or I should say, finding the scriptures and adding them and so forth. That's the very first millennia. It was handed down and handed down. And, you know, as they started compiling these books and these source documents, it became pretty obvious. I'm here to tell you, folks, that these newer versions, I warn you right now, and I warn you when we look at all of these things, that as they continue to bring in new, it is not for more accuracy. It is all about corruption and making money and serving mammon. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.